This is a recording of Mary Jane Lohmer, 70 the Green, made on the 30th of January, 2017.
Okay, we're ready. My name is Mary Jane Lohmer. I was born Mary Jane Williams Mitchell, which is quite a mouthful until I married Roger Edward John Lohmer. Just put your finger down when I go. I can start. I was born on the 25th of October 1937 in Much Wenlock, Shropshire. My father was a geologist and my mother had attended Girton College, obtaining a qualification in gardening. They met on a walking holiday, as my father had polio at 16 and was told he could never walk again. He wrote to my mother, but he lost the letter in his pocket and found it 6 months later. Happily to say, he managed to contact her again and they were married in Barnes in 1932. They had 5 years without me, but I popped up in 1937. Having been a geologist, my father had lived in quite a lot of places round Britain, and my first memories were of Salisbury and going to the convent there. Happily, my father managed to get a job in Iraq, the Iraq Petroleum Company, which prospected for oil in the north of Iraq. And we packed up our suitcases and joined him on a Pan-American flight from London to Malta and then Malta to Haifa in 1947. We were quite shocked to arrive at the oil camp, which was very basic, but my mother taught me through the Parents National Educational Union until I went to an American school in Beirut for 4 years. And then went to school in Surrey at St. Teresa's Convent. Loving children, I went on to get a degree in teaching at the Montessori College of Meridian College in London, where I obtained a distinction in the practice of education. I loved it. I was very happy. And I was very lucky to have met my husband in Basra. He came in the Royal Navy up on a ship, and we met in the wardroom, and that was it. We just fell for one another, and the following year, in the middle of my training, I was lucky enough to marry Roger down in Sussex. He was then posted, which was rather sad, because he was straight away posted to Malta, and I followed him when the training was finished, and I taught in Malta. And then he was posted to Gibraltar, and I was I did a lot of teaching there. I was able to train the Gibraltarian ladies in my latest school, all the different modern things that had happened since the school was started. And I had a wonderful time in Gibraltar, and for the first year we were the young couple who were really enjoying themselves, going to special parties on ships. And then I was very excited to find I was pregnant in 1962, and I gave birth to my son Christopher in July 1963. And we had a really lovely time taking the baby into the convent in Gibraltar, and he would be loved by the nuns and also spoiled by all the people that we knew. Sadly, my mother got very ill in 1964, and we came home, and my father was left, and when she died, was left alone. So he came to live with us in Rowland's Castle. We bought this house, which you would not believe anybody would buy. It was antiquated, it had been a telephone exchange, it had been a big party place, and I think one chap who was connected with the Mary Rose. The chap who lived in Beach House, Woodbury Lane, Rowland's Castle, was connected with the Mary Rose and other people. But we moved in, and my father went hell-bent to get the floors right, get everything in perfect condition, because Mary Jane had brought home 24 tiny Spanish chairs to start a nursery school. And she was really keen to get going. She got permission from, I think it could have been Winchester, was inspected and given permission to start the nursery school on the 1st of January 1965. I started with 5 children, and I did through the years until 1974. I must have had up to 500 children. They came 2 mornings a week, 3 mornings a week, or if they were very, very active, they came for 5 mornings a week. And I contact friends now, and they say, oh yes, you said, they said to me, he's very active, you know. And I would say, oh jolly good, that's just how I like them. They're really fun to be able to get them to do all the things I want them to do. While we were at Beach House, I was so lucky to get pregnant with Miranda Claire Elizabeth Loma, my daughter, and she just fell into the happiness of the school, and we got on very well indeed. She used to have lots of friends in the village, and the house, because it is a big house, had lots of different hiding holes, and she used to go off with her friends and play games in different places and all come back. At the time, we had a black Labrador and a golden Labrador, and they had puppies twice. We had Siamese cats, as people will remember, and they had kittens lots of times. So the children were able to handle animals, get used to doing things, and we spent a lot of time in the garden and going out. We didn't go for country walks or things like that, but we did we did have a lot of people coming in to talk about things and have had a wonderful time. At that time, while this was going on, Roger started the South Coast Motor Cruiser School. So we had the nursery school downstairs, and we had the people who were forwarded by the Royal Yachting Association for courses on how to learn to run motorboats. It wasn't sailing boats, it was motorboats. And he was very popular for this because a lot of people didn't know how to steer their boats. And so he filled a big vacuum, and he went on doing that until the late 90s when he went to work for Vosper Thornycroft. So we had a very busy time looking after the people. I used to do, we had three boats at Hamble, and I used to do all the sandwiches for them, and I had people coming in from the village to help make the sandwiches to send them. And then when we had got quite famous, we then had boatyards in Hamble advising that they had crews coming from Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Oman, and others, officers who worked in the navies and the coast guards, and they sent groups in fours. So you'd have four arriving, and I can remember one day, the day before they got here, the drains got blocked. So we were getting the drains sorted out. But we had to accommodate all their different food requirements, and I used to make kabsa, which is lamb with rice, which is quite different from Indian food. Iraqi food is quite different, and Saudi Arabia is different also. And we were very lucky to be very good friends with a sheikh from Bahrain who sent us a lot of different people to be trained, and they are still working now and still training in the various countries. The idea was that we sent them back so they could teach other people how to handle the boats they had bought from Hamble, from Britain. So that went on for a long time. We then decided that it was time to take the house, the business, to Southsea. So we took it to a beautiful big house in Queen's Crescent, and there we had different groups of people coming, and that was then when we had one very interesting, several very royal gentlemen coming and doing private courses with Roger, and he still had the HDML, Harbour Motor Defence Launch, at Hamble, so they were able to go out and do courses. That was wonderful, but we'd had, I mean, he was getting on by then, so we retired and we moved over to 14 The Green, Rowlands Castle, where I opened a coffee shop, and ladies in the village who worked in the coffee shop with me are still in the village now. Helen, the policeman's wife, worked for me for most of the time, and the lady who lived in the house I am now in was my
maid,
Edwina Butler. Sadly, she had she worked for me for many, many years, and sadly I heard through the Women's Institute that she had gone into a home, and I rushed round and spoke to her brother, and he rented the property 70 the Green to me, and that is how I come to be living in Rowland's Castle today. Sadly, Roger had died in 2011. Yes. I'm just going to think now. I've always been interested in drawing, and as a little girl, when I was at the convent in Salisbury, I used to do lots of drawing and painting, and again when I went to the convent in Worthing. When I got to Iraq, I was amazed by the amount of wonderful coloured flowers on the hillsides. And I had a donkey, and I used to go off on my own on the donkey and draw little pictures and do various things, which was fantastic. I went, when I was in Beirut, I used to draw pictures of Beirut and the lovely blue sea there and swimming on the wonderful beaches. But it really came into its own when I left school and went to the Hastings School of Art in 1958. I went to the Hastings School of Art in September 1955, after I had left school. I'd received a distinction for my art at school, and I've still got the book. And I loved being in the art college, and did a lot for a year. But then my mother needed to go back to live in Basra with my father. So we flew back to Iraq in 1955. And it was in 1956 when I met my husband in Basra. But I had always painted. I painted pictures of the date palms in Basra and the river and all the dhows going up the Shat al-Arab, and which was absolutely marvellous. That spurred me on to want to go back and do the teacher's training college when I had been teaching in Basra. And painting has just followed me through. I used to do an awful lot of cards and pictures and things for everybody right the way through. I went to the Malta Industries when we were in Malta, and I worked for the Malta Potteries. And I painted all sorts of things, flowers, and they would put the special dyes on the pots, and then you would have them fired afterwards. And I've still got pots that I have painted when I was there. So it's always been like a thin gold thread running through my life. When I got to Gibraltar, I painted a picture of Gibraltar, and I had an exhibition, and I used to go out painting with the Admiral's wife, and we would have forays into Spain and paint together. That was wonderful. I've still got friends, and I go to their house and I see the pictures that I painted with oils hanging up on their walls, which is rather exciting. Then, I say, when we came home, we came to Beach House. And for a little while, I think I was very busy, having had Miranda in 1967. I didn't really start painting the village until about 1975, and I've now got a record of all the pictures that I've painted from that date until now. I wrote a book about the village in 1988, but I didn't include any pictures of my own. I drew lots of little scribbles of birds and animals that you would see in going when you were walking round the village. Birds, and I've got a picture of the brickworks, an old-fashioned picture, and lots of little scribbles which to anyone today would look like a child's drawings, but they were drawn the way that I used to draw when I was teaching children, and I would explain something and quickly draw a picture. In that time between 67 and about 74, I did an awful lot of pictures and drawings of animals and a Mr. Crinkle and Dr. Snoozy toys. Now, recently I have been redrawing all those particular animals, and I would like to get them published. I'm very good with drawing things, and I'm very good at putting them on the computer, but I'm not very good at putting the words with the pictures. So everything is sitting there waiting for the next step. But I've got about 10 books ready that I want to go ahead with. Edward, my grandson of 5, loves me to read him the stories. And so and he invents things as well, which is great fun. I haven't drawn my daughter's new house yet, because they've only moved in recently, but I'm hoping to do that. But I have done quite a lot of paintings from 2000 and...
Go back.
Oh, I know, I was talking about those.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
My neighbour in France rang me on Wednesday, because her husband's birthday was the same day as my husband's birthday. So we always used to shout across the hedge saying, "Bon anniversaire!" And she told me that she has got my printer in her downstairs flat. She has just supplied the post lady in the village of Home in the Hérault with some more of my cards of the village of Home and Montagnac in France. And I sell them to tourists, which I've been doing, but I'd completely forgotten that I'd done that. I also paint flowers. We have a wonderful craft club in the Rowlands Castle Women's Institute, and we meet once a month in the United Reform Church, and every month I paint a flower from my garden. These cards are then reproduced and sent to ladies of a certain age who are very happy to receive birthday congratulations from the Women's Institute. And I'm still doing that. This week I have just painted an amaryllis, and I'm very thrilled about that. To go back to the second book that I produced, I suddenly had a brilliant idea that I would include all the paintings done by William Cotton in the 1840s or so. And so then it led me to think, why don't I do some of mine as well? So in 2012 and 2013, I pottered around the village, took lots of photographs, and did lots of paintings to renew all the paintings that I had done in the past. And these have now been included in my second book, Round and About Rowlands Castle, published in 2014. I did this book specifically to raise money for the Pulmonary Hypertension Association, who have looked after me for many years since I had a problem. them with my lungs. And I was able to sell enough books to sell and send them money, and I've also given 100 books to the local school and 200 to the new Rowlands Castle Heritage Society, which is starting up this year, which is absolutely fantastic to have. And I'm very, very keen that the Heritage should be taking note of what is happening today. And I can't tell you how very strongly I feel about that. So my book now has been on sale in the village, but I'm now virtually stopping that, and it will just be here for people to come and buy if they wish to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When my husband had a lot of students coming from the Middle East, we bought 14 and 16 The Green. We had a wonderful time there. The coffee shop was absolutely fantastic. One very amusing thing that did happen, because we had a group from Bahrain, they wanted to barbecue a sheep on The Green. And they asked Roger, he said, no, you can't do that. But they were very, very amenable to everything else, and we had no problems with them when we were there. Also on The Green, we had a wonderful village fair. And this came out every year since 1973, run by the Rowlands Castle Association. And I painted the first picture on the very first booklet that had the
events
in it. And I've got a little picture of it here. One of the activities on The Green was Morris dancing, and they used to all come into the coffee shop. But I think the very best day I ever had was the day of the... Yes. Say when you're ready. So when my very, very best day for the coffee shop was, we took £600, which was an enormous amount, when the Tour de France came through Rowlands Castle. It was absolutely fantastic. Now, my son having gone to live in France, I was accustomed to the wonderful, huge amount of different vehicles that came before the actual riders came through. So I was used to it. But we had Radio 1 from France and Radio 2, and it was absolutely fantastic. And they all came in the coffee shop, and they was all speaking French, speaking English, and of course my son was very thrilled that it was coming through. He went to France when he was 18, and he's 51 now, and he didn't come back, but he did a lot of the cycling. But it really was. But the only thing is, with the Tour de France, if you blink, you miss it. And it absolutely shocked through. But it was just the environment and the whole thing of the wonderful colours and everybody being there was absolutely super. The village fair was very good. It really was. It was such fun because everybody went. Everybody had a stall. Lots of lovely, exciting people with racing cars and horses and all sorts of things were up the end. Dog shows, and it has gone from strength to strength. But with the coffee shop, I used to sell about 200 strawberry tarts every single, and there we were. We made them all by hand. Now these days everything is done by machine, but we would line all the tins, put all the custard in the bottom, and then slap all the strawberries around the top. And then I had all the wonderful teenagers from the village who've all gone to Don to do super things, who worked for me, they would take trays round and sell them right the way round the green. And then, of course, in the evening, you had the super duper dance, and everybody would go, and it was quite fantastic. Fireworks are also always done on the 5th of November or nearabouts, up in the recreation ground. Recreation ground is wonderful. It's got so many facilities today for everybody. And also on the green we celebrate May Day and the Rogation Days as well, and have in the middle of this year, last year I mean, the Queen's birthday, everybody was out there having parties and having the most fantastic celebrations. I was celebrating my daughter's MBE, and it was absolutely wonderful. I'll go on about my daughter and son in a little while. But there were so many parties with so many little tents, and it was quite fantastic. The Silver Jubilee, they had a hock roast, and everybody was round and in the Robin Hood, which always provides the most wonderful entertainment. And I think that's about it. Waiting for the train. Final thing was when the Queen inspected the fleet in 1977, my very good friend Heather and I took our children down to Southsea and went across on the ferry to the Isle of Wight through all the ships. It was absolutely fantastic, really magical. And you just remember these things, and if you're feeling a bit glum one day, you just think, what have I seen in my lifetime has been absolutely magnificent, and all coming from a tiny village. Rowland's Castle Village is well known for its wonderful railway station, and many people have worked in London and come back every day. Many people still use the train, but it could have gone to Finchdean, the next village, but luckily it ended up in Rowland's Castle, and it used to have great big sheds and lots of shunting places, and was really very, very useful. One story tells of trying to get it started in 1847, and the men in Havant took the railway line up because they didn't want to share the stretch beyond having been taken up, and further on an engine was padlocked to the rails. There was an angry scrimmage, and the London and South West men had no option but to return to London. Now this is happening today.
Yeah.
We're having terrible times, not with the Rowland's Castle to Havant, but from
Southern Rail
is having an awful lot of problems. So it doesn't end. It doesn't, it never ends, right. My son, Christopher Lomer, was born in Gibraltar in the Royal Naval Hospital. He was very well welcomed by us because we'd waited 4 years for him and were so delighted. He was a healthy 7-pound boy, and we were able to take various trips and went off to Morocco with him when he was about 6 weeks old, and I fed him behind carpets in the souk. We found lovely hotels in the mountains and went down to Casablanca, altogether a fantastic place. Marrakesh, where I didn't look at snakes in baskets, I was very careful because I'm a little bit, the countryside there was very dramatic. I went back to school in the convent, as I think I've mentioned, and left him in the parlour. The year of Christmas 1963, we went back to England and saw my parents, and we had a great time, and then flew back to Gibraltar to stay there until the summer. And by that time he was a really bouncy little brown chap, and very full of fun. And I was determined to have a nursery school, and I got to England, and when we got back to England, we bought this house which looked like an absolute wreck, was a wreck. But he didn't mind, he just crawled through everything and thoroughly enjoyed himself. And sadly my mother died and my father came to live with me. Christopher grew up a very happy child. When he was 5, he went to the convent Oakwood, Oaklands convent in Waterlooville. But he wasn't a scholar, he didn't like school, so we sent him to Mrs. Christopher went to a private school in Compton and did very well until we felt that it was time he moved on, and he went to St. John's College in Southsea, where he spent most of the time looking out of the window. He managed to get himself some O-levels and didn't know what he wanted to do, so he went to work for Lord Besborough in Stansted House, with having a fantastic time. He was really with great joy, because he was out in the woods with Phil Harding. They were chopping down trees and he learned a lot. 2 days a week he went to Petersfield to do a special course, which was called a BTEC course, which taught him accounts. Now Chris was always very good at maths, and it was no problem for him, so he did the BTEC course. And then in about March, I think it was 81 or so, he joined the cycling club, and he started cycling professionally, amateurly. And off he went with his bike with all the people who used to come to my coffee shop, and he had a wonderful time. He would cycle everywhere. Then one day he came to us and he said, "Mum, Dad, I think I want to go and cycle in France." I wasn't horrified about this, because, we'd introduced him to France, he'd been to France a lot. And so I said, okay. Now my father had an old friend who lived in Cast, so he went to stay with this lady. And he blossomed. He had a year or 2 years of racing, and he lived with another doctor who was a sports doctor. And he did very well. Then he came home and he said, "Mum, I think they're putting too many injections in my bum." That were his words. "I'm going to stop cycling." So he stopped cycling and he started doing a job in McDonald's in Toulouse. And he worked there for 7 years. And he became the manager of the Toulouse McDonald's. And then he met a girl, and he went back to live with her near Aix-en-Provence, where he also did McDonald's. Then McDonald's, he began to get tired of McDonald's, so he went to Decathlon. Now Decathlon is a sports company. So he had a wonderful time there. Then he was headhunted by an American company called, they make labels all over the world. And so he has been the manager for Europe since his up and down jobs. He is now the manager for Europe for this particular American company. and he absolutely loves it. He had a beautiful wooden house built in a shed, and they came along and they put it all up one day. 8 years later, they've both decided they want to move on. They've sold the house, and they've got planning permission for a beautiful new one. His wife has produced, he had two children previously, and his wife has produced his third child, and they are building, she works for the Mary, so she is able to know what is going on exactly. And next week, which is the 10th of February, 2017, he's moving out of the house into a rented house until the house is built. Now, he's very good with his hands, because my dad, who had polio, could do anything with his hands, and it is the same with Christopher. And so we're now await events for when he is able to welcome us. We're welcome at all times, and I go regularly. And he has two stepdaughters and two other children, and so he's French, and he comes back very regularly and has a very good lifestyle, very nice. So that's right. Miranda Loma was born to Roger and Mary Jane Loma in St. Mary's Hospital, Portsmouth, on the 10th of July 1967. She was 8 pounds 3 ounces, so a bit larger than her brother, who she liked to terrorize. At the time of her birth, Roger was out at sea round the Isle of Wight, taking fishing parties out on his first motor cruiser school, called Malacca. I spent one night in the hospital and came home the following morning by ambulance in my dressing gown, much to Christopher's amusement. She was baptized on Sunday the 6th of August at St. Joseph's Church, Havant. She was a very healthy baby and slept very well through the night. She wore baby grows, which zipped down the side, and she had this lovely big bag and snuggled in. As was normal in those days, 1967, she slept out in her pram in the garden whenever the weather permitted and when I was busy with nursery school. As the house was often full of adult students from the UK and later from overseas, she became accustomed to talking to all sorts of people. And I remember one time we went to the pub at Charlton, the George, with another little girlfriend and two of the Arabs. And it was really very amusing, and they were saying, when you grow up, I will marry you. But she was only 4 at the time. And she started her schooling at North Gate House School in Chichester, and then went on to the convent in Midhurst when she left when she was 16, having done just O levels. She then went to St. John's College, the college on the hill. South Downs College. She went to South Downs College and did some extra O levels so that she could start a beauty therapy course. Can you stop a second? Right. Okay. Then she went to live in London, which was quite a cultural shock after having been in a convent in the middle of Midhurst in Sussex. And she had to live in the Young Women's Association, YWCA. And she was very lucky. She roomed with another girl a little bit older who looked after her and checked that she didn't have all her food stolen, which was what happened in those days. And she went to a beauty school for 6 months and obtained her degree, her qualifications as a beautician. But she said, but Mum, these people have got spots. Why have they got spots? Because they're not eating the right things. I have to go and learn what they are doing. You know, it's making them get spots. So she went off to Tufnell Park. I don't think it wasn't a university then, but it was a college, where she got a degree in food science. Turn it off for a second. She was 17 when she left home to study beauty therapy in London, questioning why plants got skin problems, and went on to do a food degree at Tufnell Park College, where she obtained her first degree in 1997. She worked at St. Thomas's Hospital and spent a year in the United States at Davis University. Returning to the UK, she obtained her doctorate titled... That's not correct. Turn it off a second. After her degree in food science, she returned to the UK and did another degree in the dietary microparticles and Crohn's disease. She travelled widely in the US and circled the globe, going to many exciting places. They went to China, they went to Australia, New Zealand. One of her favourite pastimes is wine, and she knows an awful lot about wine, which is amazing. She's an expert in diet and gastroenterology, who is widely published, and an eminent dietitian in her field, which also covers food additives and FODMAPs. FODMAPs are fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, and monosaccharides, and polyols. There is now an app to help patients. As she tells her fascinating mother, there are many things we have yet to discover. Miranda lives in Surrey with her partner, John Wilson, and their 5-year-old son, Edward. The most exciting thing is that... Can we stop a second? The most exciting thing is Dr. Miranda has been awarded an MBE in the 2016 Birthday Honours List from the Queen for services to dietetics and gastroenterology. She's a senior consultant dietitian at Guy's and St. Thomas's, with a joint academic position at King's College London. She's a leader in the management of functional bowel disorders and Crohn's disease. She has published British Dietetic Association guidelines for Crohn's disease and irritable bowel syndrome. She leads an educational course for dietitians on the low FODMAP diet and has trained over 600 dietitians in the successful dietary treatment for irritable bowel syndrome. She's editor of a book entitled Advanced Nutrition and Dietetics in Gastroenterology, and was awarded the BDA Elsie Widowson Lecture in 2014 as a recognition of her national and international impact in dietetics. On Friday, she flew to Barcelona and spoke at a conference where all the dietitians were Spanish. They had the most wonderful system there of, she would say something, they would give a question in Spanish, it was then translated into English, and then she